This is the March 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. He's out of Gallatin, Tennessee. John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And Mike Zuzulo joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, or search us out in your favorite podcast application. Joe Vaklevic, let's get a list of items we probably should discuss for the day. I know the Ukraine war will be on that list. What else should we take up?
Yeah, so that's the obvious one. I wrote down a couple of other things. We've got a lot of data forthcoming. Next week, we've got the prospective plantings report, which is always a wild card. There's always a surprise in that report. And this year, I think, will be no different. I think we're bound to see several surprises. The other piece of data that's going to be really interesting to me is when USDA gets into its new crop balance sheets in May. I think the making demand projections for all three crops, corn, soybeans, and wheat, is going to be a very tall task. I mean, they're facing just an incredibly tough job there, given this black seed supply disruption and also given the South American weather situation.
John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities. Other things to add to the list?
It's kind of hard to add much more to the situation in the Ukraine war. I've been at this for 40 years and I've never seen anything like this. And most of us haven't, of course, nobody has, I guess. You'd probably have to go back to World War II or someplace in there where we saw a major exporting country basically maybe lose a crop and, or two crops. And it's just, it's going to be the narrative as we go forward here. Will Ukraine get their corn crop planted? And the most optimistic people on that are in Ukraine. I think they're being purposely optimistic, but we have something here that we've never even come close to dealing with. Ukraine's an exporter of 1.3 billion bushels of corn, and they may not have any corn to export next year. So, boy, it's hard to top that right now as a focus of conversation.
Mike Zuzulo from GlobalComResearch.com.
Just real briefly, Todd, I wonder how much President Biden's trip to Europe and maybe going to the Polish border, which he let slip today, brings up the idea and raises the element of famine in the key parts of the world, of the Middle East and Africa, and whether this really changes the government policy when he comes back, the U.S. policy, and also how we treat China. I think China is going to become more and more a player in the role of this Ukraine war. And unfortunately, it could be, you know, a negative factor for the commodity side of the equation that we have to keep track of.
Well, let's take up the Biden trip to Poland, but more on the side that you want to, which is the policy issue. When he comes back and food security across the planet, how might you think policy would change?
Well, I think, you know, we saw a little bit of this, and I couldn't agree more with John that we've never been through this before, going back to, you know, World War II maybe, but it seems as though the food versus fuel issue will become maybe more and more prescient. Yes, we have an energy crisis brewing in Europe, and it could spread over here to the United States, and so it would kind of be foolhardy to change ethanol policy, and which could make gas prices go up even higher. But I wonder if that's not going to be something in Washington that really gets talked about a lot, and the market has to try and factor that in. I think you add to that, I talked to clients this week and subscribers this week about, you know, why hedge in 2022? What good reasons can I give you? And between that, the bilateral relationship between the United States and China potentially worsening, the avian influenza, just the fact that the energy prices could continue to go higher because of lost production out of OPEC Plus could create a recessionary pathway for markets to go down in the commodities. And then, you know, the food versus fuel, along with the Fed policy shift. If you take a look at almost all those, Todd, except for the avian influenza, they almost all have to do with government policy. And history would suggest that typically is one of the key headwinds that we face when we have commodity rallies like this.
John Zanker, I'll continue on this policy issue. I made note earlier in the week that the European Union was talking about bringing into production some fallow acres that they've allowed EU farmers to set aside and paid them to do so, and also that they were considering, and they have a pretty good-sized biofuels industry, of slackening off on that. Does this concern you?
Yes, and I think I think you put it well, that when the government gets involved. And, you know, it's one of those things where we want them involved when it works out best for us, and maybe not so much when they don't. And, you know, on these policy decisions, there's a group where those decisions will help and those decisions will hurt. So it's a two-sided thing. It's a difficult thing. And as far as pricing, you know, we've started pricing some new crop soybeans at $15 here. When this is not where we started, unfortunately. We started at a lower level, but we certainly felt like we needed to add some here. We're spending a lot to put this crop in the ground, especially corn, obviously. We haven't sold much corn yet. And I just think, again, what's going on in Ukraine is pretty spectacular. But yeah, what happens with China? And what if there's a ceasefire, and which we're all praying for, but the reality of that is, if you wake up tomorrow morning and the headlines are a ceasefire has been reached, we're probably going to see limit down in everything, and it may be more than one. So this is still a market that deserves some good attention from a hedging perspective and a risk management perspective, because we're looking at some very good levels here, and even with the input costs where they are, there's some pretty good money to be made. And we've all been around this business long enough to know that some of these sure bets don't turn out that way in the end. And we're sitting there wondering why we didn't do more when we had better opportunities.
And Joe Vaclavec, one more policy issue, and we'll come back to the new crop balance sheets, but this will have to do with that, I think, which would be CRP in the United States. Senator Bozeman out of Arkansas, and a whole series of ag associations have said, hey, we might need to bring something back into production. What do you think of those ideas?
It's a nice idea. I think there are a lot of issues with that idea. They've already started planting crops in the South here in the U.S., so it's probably too late in those areas. A lot of people would argue that a good chunk of those CRP acres are, you know, they're enrolled in CRP for a reason. They're not prime fields. It's not ground that farmers are interested in working. You also got the fertilizer issue, high input prices. In addition to that, and honestly, maybe the biggest thing would be political pushback. So Biden's a Democrat. Most of your conservation groups tend to lean toward that side of the aisle. I think Biden would face tremendous political opposition within his own party to get anything like that done to any material degree. So I'm going to say it's far-fetched, but, you know, this is a wartime crisis situation. You can't rule anything out.
And since we are talking about balance sheet issues at this point, why don't you take up that May new crop balance sheet, the WASDE that you discussed early in the program?
One thing that's going to be of interest to me is wheat and demand, and where does that wheat demand go? If Russia and Ukraine aren't going to ship out the wheat, where does it go? I was looking at new crop U.S. wheat commitments, and we've actually got the best book of new crop wheat sales since 2011. It was around 2014 that Russia kind of overtook the U.S. as being the world's largest wheat exporter. And we could very well see some much better demand for U.S. wheat this year. And the prices are reflecting that. I know that there's been a big divorce between the cash market and the futures market. There's a lot of speculative money. It's really messy right now. But I mean, you could make the argument, and granted, it's real early, but you could make the argument that you could see some much better export demand for wheat. When you look at soybeans, we've got the best book of new crop soybean sales on record, and we're seeing some contra-seasonal sales of old crop soybeans. And this is all because, you know, the South American crop's a billion bushels plus lighter than we had thought preseason. Corn, maybe more of a question question mark. I think the new crop corn book is pretty good. The high ethanol stocks concern me, but USDA has a very, very tall task in trying to project new crop demand when it comes to the 22-23 marketing, really for all three crops.
And Mike Suslow, go back to 1991 or thereabouts when the Soviet Union fell apart. And I'm wondering, just after that, there wasn't really production out of Ukraine or Russia for quite some time. How easily would it be for the world to adjust to something that's 20 years, 25 to 30 years back?
I don't think it could in 1 year, Todd. I think that's where the world food policy people came out this week and talked about the Ukrainians and the Russians having about 13 and a half million tons of wheat and about 16 million tons of corn that are literally frozen in those two countries. And more than that is the fact that, as we found out over the last 2 weeks through the Ukrainians, whether it's APK Inform or the Ag Ministry, which their Ag Minister resigned today, reportedly, they're going from 40% lost acres to now 55% lost acres in their spring crops. So the dilemma then becomes that 13 and a half million tons of wheat and 16 million tons of corn even becomes more dear and more precious and will not go out into the marketplace if they can't get planted with their new crop, because they're going to have to take care of their domestic market, obviously, first. And then the WFP people are talking about how if we neglect Northern Africa because of this famine that Europe is creating in their minds because of this Ukrainian issue, then North African people will come to Europe. If you neglect the Middle East, Middle Easterners will immigrate to Europe. This is just, you throw on top of that the energy issue of Vladimir Putin saying he's not going to pump oil out of the Caspian because of a weather problem, and the trade saying, well, that doesn't make much sense. And then he wants rubles and for his payments to, quote, unfriendly countries. This is one of those things where it's a ball of yarn that we haven't even started to untangle yet. And like one of the other fellows said, if we could get a peace agreement relatively quickly, it would sure do a lot of good to have to not go down some paths. But you can't go back to a command economy. We saw that this year earlier with China and their hog industry. And they tried to run the show from the top, and look what that got them. It got them terrible inefficiencies, another sweeping vast amount of African swine fever, an oversupply of beans that went to an undersupply of soy meal. And so you're looking at a command economy again if Russia pulls this out, and they won't be like they have been the last 10, 15, 20 years.
John, as Mike mentioned and you alluded to, Ukraine is likely to lose not one but two crops, the old crop already that's in hand, unlikely to be able to move, can't move at the moment at least for sure, and the new crop may not get put into the ground. How much of an issue does it become for you?
It's huge. There's probably, I would say, at least 15 million tons of old crop corn to get moved out, and how are they going to do that? Currently, they ship about 5%. Via rail to the west, and then those trains have to be unloaded and loaded onto another one because the rail widths aren't the same in the Ukraine as in Romania and Poland. So it's just terribly inefficient. They have a fabulous system to load out on the water, but currently those berths are being taken. Either they're frozen and they're not being moved, or there's Russian ships in them, and one apparently burning today. So this is just, you know, when you see that ship setting on fire in a port that was used to load grain, I think that's just a strong indication of what's to come. And they're down to, I think Odessa is the last major port city that has not been attacked in a major way and or controlled by the Russians, but there's not going to be any boats going out. So 15 million tons of corn is almost 2 years worth of usage for domestic usage in Ukraine. They produce about 1.65 billion bushels, 1.32 billion of that went out as exports in 2021. They export, we had our biggest year ever to China last year of corn shipments, and the Ukrainians still ship more corn to the Chinese than we did. So there's a lot of Chinese demand there that that we've not really been sniffing completely. So the Ukrainian, I think, ag ministry thought that they can still get 60% of their corn planted. I don't think there is any chance that we come or they come remotely close to that. There are elevators being destroyed. There are farms being destroyed, equipment being destroyed. You know, even rumors of mines being put in some of these fields. And the most productive corn area in Ukraine is in the northeast, which is where the heaviest concentration of Russian activity and troops are. And they need to start planting their corn in late April. And how are they going to do that? Where are they going to get the money to do that? Banks aren't going to loan money yet. We're worried about getting all the fertilizer and chemicals we need here. And we don't have people shooting us on a daily basis. So how are they going to do that in Ukraine? I think if they plant 20% of their crop, it'll be a miracle. And that'll be in that far western area that doesn't have a lot of presence. But if you're planting a crop as a Ukrainian farmer, you might be putting your life savings into a crop that may not even be yours when it's done. And can you get it? Can you get it sprayed? Can you get it fertilized? And can you ship it? And where are you going to ship it to if all the storage is already full from last year's crop? It's just a disaster in the making. And if I was a Ukrainian farmer, I'd be putting any money that I had in euro dollars or dollars and sitting this one out.
Joe Vaclavic, China, of course, is a player on the world stage. They're a player in this war as it relates to the import of grains from the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. Are there enough ports on the Sea of Azov to help them maintain the economy in China and the food supplies, wheat in particular, coming out of Russia?
I'm no global shipping expert. I think that they will maintain their relationship with Russia. There may be other countries who say that they don't want Russian grain or oil or whatever, but to this point, even European countries are still taking oil from Russia, and they're still taking LNG from Russia. So I don't see any reason why that would stop. Could it slow? Could it steer some additional Chinese business to the U.S.? I guess it could. I'm worried, kind of like to mirror some of the things Mike said, I'm worried about policy a little bit with China. If Biden says the wrong thing or does the wrong thing and China reacts adversely and there's some sort of sanction or you get into like a trade war type environment again, that would be a very, very bad thing. And China has been a big buyer of, U.S. soybeans in particular as of late, given this light South American crop. But, all that can go away really quickly, and we saw that, and it wasn't that long ago. So that sort of policy thing, I guess, does kind of come back around to scare me a little bit, just one of a million things, I guess.
Mike, how will China be a player in this calendar year?
Yeah, one of the things that I think the calendar year suggests is that they know that Brazil and now Argentina, with some corn production reductions this week of anywhere from 1 to 2 million tons of production, Todd, that they know that there's a limited amount of competition. I think this is more about 2023 and 2024, especially with that being a presidential election year. And I hate to go out that far, but we're dealing with such a wide scope and wide-ranging issue that if these energy prices go up too much more and sustain these levels, and we truly have diesel shortages, or the natural gas exchange locks up in Europe, that some of the largest energy traders in the world said at a Financial Times Commodities conference this week, we really got to start thinking outside the box as risk managers, especially with the new crop beans hitting 15 and the 23 beans getting into that 13 plus range. But I don't think the Chinese have a lot of wiggle room this calendar year. But I think that what they could do is try and find some extra beans from somebody, or some extra corn or some extra wheat, and make a lot of ripples that would just add more volatility to a historically volatile market. So this is where it goes back to, I'm not a big fan of doing a lot of cash sales this year, just because there's so many things on the table, not to mention still having a wheat drought out there. But I sure am a fan of getting paper positions on the books so that I have a floor underneath me, because Just think of soybeans, for instance. We haven't talked a lot about soybeans. Look at the soybean market. What has helped lead the soybeans to this price level? It's not just been about Brazil's drought. It's been about the vegetable oil market, and it's been about the crude oil market. What if the crude oil market drops $30 a barrel? Who's to say we can't see a $2 to $3 bushel drop in old crop beans, and that leads to a $1.50 to $2 bushel drop in new crop beans? So this is the kind of thing that we really have to start thinking about right here, because guess what? As Joe alluded to with these March reports, we're going to start doing work in the fields, and I'm hearing planting is already starting in some parts west of me, and oats are being planted north of me. The farmers are very eager to get out there and get this crop planted right now.
Joe, John and Mike have both expressed concern about pricing out soybeans for new crop. Are you in the same position?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it, but 2022 is actually not my biggest concern. You know, a farmer's able to go out, understand his budgets for the most part, make profitable sales. That's not what worries me. 2023 is what absolutely scares me, to be honest. Who's to say that input costs couldn't rise another 20% next year? Who's to say that that couldn't happen? Because I think it could. And if that does happen, what sort of December 23 corn price do you need? What sort of November 23 soybean price do you need to make money? And that's what really scares me. There's no crop insurance safety net. I know there's some of these margin protection programs out there that you can set early. That's something I'd maybe look at if I was a farmer. But that going out to 23 and even 24 in this inflationary environment really, really scares me in terms of inputs. It's like everything we know about the way these markets are priced, like, you know, it used to be $3 corn was bad and $5 corn was good, right? That doesn't exist anymore. Like now it's like $5 corn is about break even or maybe not even. And, you know, you really need 6 to 7. So I'm concerned, not so much about 2022, even at this point. I'm more greatly concerned about 23 and the prospect of a continuation of this inflationary effect when it comes to inputs.
We probably, and we're more than 20 minutes into the program, should take up next week's prospective plantings and grain stocks numbers as well. John Zenker, why don't you begin with the acreage figures for me? What kind of estimates do you have?
Well, we've been out on a limb, and I may have talked to you about this before, but we've risk management commodities, we've been out on a limb since October. We think corn acres are going to come up short of expectations and potentially well short. Before we get to the June 30th report, I think next week, I haven't seen an official average trade guess yet, I guess, but I think that's going to be in the 91.5 area. You know, beans, 88.5 to 89, something in there. I think think that there is a lot of focus on what the Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Eastern Nebraska farmer is going to do, and he's not going to do much different. He's going to stay in a rotation. He may even lean a little bit toward corn, but I think the surprise in acreage is going to come from the Dakotas, where they added 2.7 million acres combined last spring, and that was due to a heavy prevent plant the previous year. That's not going back to corn. Those people didn't make a lot of money last year with their drought, so things are tight there. And spring wheat prices, as strong as they've been at this time of the year in a very long time. And they tend to plant, you know, a similar amount of spring wheat in most years. So there's not going to be acres coming out of spring wheat into corn and soybeans. It's going to be the other way around, I believe. And then you take your fringe states. We heard of a farmer in Kansas today switching corn acres to Milo. Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas. I have customers. My two biggest customers are in North Carolina. They added cotton and they added wheat. One of them planted 800 acres of wheat. He hasn't planted wheat since 2016. Corn prices are good. Soybean prices are good. But soybeans have gained on corn since December 15th. So corn has done a poor job of buying acres, a very poor job. Cotton, you know, look at the cotton price. There's just so many competitive alternatives that I think, and I'm not confident that they're going to go under 90 million on this report. But I think by June 30th, we could see that acreage number under 90 and maybe down in the low to mid 90s before it's all over with. And of course, part of that will depend upon what kind of spring planning weather we have.
Mike Zuzula, recognizing that this report is a survey of some 75,000 farmers. And by the way, those who want to watch what the presentation to probably, well, it'll either be the secretary or whoever signs. They can live this time around about 15 minutes after the release of this report at 11 o'clock on YouTube. This is a survey of 75,000 farmers. Will there be more acres this year than there have been in the past? And I'm thinking hay acres appear to be down. And I was wondering, when John mentioned his farmers in the southeast, whether Indiana, Ohio, some of the fringe areas to the southeast might actually put more soybeans in. John says no in the case of his clientele. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where it goes back to we've not had a very good base of being able to expand here the last few years. And I think with what I picked up at the Beef House meeting in east of the Mississippi River that we had, Todd, with you, was the diesel prices and the chemical prices are being way underplayed right now. Everybody knows about the fertilizer, but the diesel prices, the fuel prices, and the chemical prices, so much more intense for the corn than it is the soybeans for the most part, is what I think that is going to inhibit a vast expansion of row crop acres, of corn and bean acres. But small grains, I think they're going to be much bigger. As John was talking about, Kansas milo, it's only going to get bigger out here as long as the drought stays as bad as it is west of Wichita. But to me, the USDA March reports, because it's both grain stocks and acreage, it's always about the trajectory after the numbers come out. Does it change the price trend like it did in 2008 for a time where the wheat made a high and the Dease corn made a high and had a significant correction? And is that potentially an opportunity to get some longs on the books in the December corn for the summertime? And that's really what I'll be looking at.
And Joe Vaklevic, your thought on acreage?
I don't have any guesses in regard to exactly where the chips will fall. I am interested to see if we see any sort of significant recovery in principal crop acres. You know, do we ever get back to like a 2013, 2014 type level? I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. I think there's going to be crops, probably more than one, that just don't end up with the acres that they actually need. That'll result in some really tight supply situations. My customers have told me largely that they're not planning any major switching, but I'm just a little guy. It's a small sample size. I don't have a great feel for it. I know we're all going to be surprised next week.
What do you think the grain stocks figures will show, Joe? And are you concerned about anything in that report?
In a lot of years, I'd probably tell you that maybe the grain stocks would be the bigger surprise. And this year, I feel like it's going to be the acreage numbers, just my gut feeling. I feel there's so much uncertainty given this fertilizer situation. I mean, it's tough for me to look at the cash market and tell you one way or the other, because there's so much speculative money. We've got the situation where, you know, grain buyers won't bid off the May contract or even off the July contract. And wheat, that's usually kind of a gauge for me. And I think it's a very poor gauge this time around.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities, I'll start with you today.
We've kind of touched on how do you protect the downside? When we're making some additional bean sales here, and certainly if this market rallies into this report, we'd like to get some corn, some new crop corn sold ahead of the report, so we can avoid one of those. For a 4-year stretch there, I think it was maybe between 2010 and 13 or 14, we had a limit up or a limit down day in every year in that stretch. So I'd like to get some additional coverage on here, but you know, my thing on the new crop from the start was, if you're going to make a sale and lock in some good levels, get some upside protection on. And because we literally could see $20 beans and $10 corn and who knows what on the wheat this summer. So $15, you can never look back and say that wasn't a good bean sale. No matter what happens, that's a good bean sale. It won't look quite as good as it will at 20. And same thing with corn. If you're selling corn at 7 and it goes to 10. So there's ways of protecting yourself. Minimum price contracts, certainly, put options for downside protection. So there are ways of locking in the downside. And I think that needs to be a big focus here in the coming weeks.
Mike Zuzulo at globalcomresearch.com. Your final word?
Just the two quick things, Todd. I feel like that the wheat, especially the European wheat futures market and the crude oil market, are still very much the drivers here as we enter this crop season. I would say, though, that the wheat and the corn, while they're still working hand in hand with one another, and the wheat continues to pull down the corn and push up the corn, we could be entering a new relationship, a new phase as we get into summer. And that's going to be, I think, predicated upon drought conditions here in the United States and what actually Ukraine actually does plant in terms of corn and what their export potential is down the road. So my two model years right now for the Deese corn continue to be a 2008 or a 2012. We still are trading very similarly to 2008 at this point.
And Joe Vaclavec from Standard Grain.
I know this is a show about grain markets and stuff, but I think that the fact that both Russia and NATO members have mentioned nuclear weapons is incredibly terrifying, and it goes far beyond anything that has to do with selling soybeans at $15 versus $16. I mean, this is like life and death, millions of lives. This is an incredibly terrifying situation, I think, for the world in general. If there's a 2% chance that there's a nuclear conflict, which I think a lot of people believe it's at least that high, that's too high. And it's incredibly terrifying. I really hope that the global leaders, governments, are able to get this thing resolved sooner rather than later.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Joe Vaclavec from Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee, John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Mike Zuzulo at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.